WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. We have a great program lined up for you. Oh, thank you. Next week's show, just want to tease it just a little bit, and I'll tease it all night. We will be broadcasting live from Campanelli Stadium in Brockton. It'll be an extended show, so we won't be going to our customary 8 o'clock, but we'll be going until 9 o'clock. We will have a gaggle of guests. Can I say that? Can I actually say that, Ben? A gaggle of guests?
Clear. Gaggle of guests. Clear.
Okay. Just want to make sure it's not incorrect, because if you don't know, then I'm going to have to go to the newsroom and see if Christine or somebody else might know if I'm using that term. I get a thumbs up? Good, okay. It's just for clarifications. A gaggle of guests for next week's program. And we will actually have in our luxury suite the prestigious, highly sought after Golden Hot Dog Award. Do you know what that's going to be for, Ben?
I have no idea, but I can't wait to find out.
Obviously, you don't listen to the South Shore's Morning News with Rob and Lisa.
Of course.
Because there is going to be a little bit of a concession competition between Lisa and Rob to see who can sell the most concessions. Now, I'm pushing for them to just kind of stick strictly with America's pastime, the hot dog, which is why I'm going to present one of them with the Golden Hot Dog Award.
I love it.
See how well they do. But I also want to make sure I let folks know also, this is Christmas in July, and anybody who shows up with a toy, they will get into the ballpark free, and it's going to a great cause. So keep that in mind. Let's pack the ballpark and at least give Lisa and Rob a fighting chance at the Golden Hot Dog Award. First annual, I might add, because I'm trying to see if we can do this next year, too.
I love it.
And get more WATD staff members involved. Now, this thing might just turn into a dud and never happen again, but we're going to give it a try. So,
could turn into a dog.
Yeah, okay. Quick tease as to who some of the folks are on this program. Starting, of course, already here is State Representative Matt Muratori, representing the 1st Plymouth District. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me again.
It's like I just saw you not too long ago.
Yeah, we were at a conference together.
We'll actually talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Coming up at 6:40, we have Plymouth County Commissioner Dan Pallotta. Of course, he will be with Shannon Resnick, who is the county's legal counsel. We'll be discussing this ongoing issue about the county farm and the county's attempt to work out a lease agreement with the Sheriff's Department. 7 o'clock, Brockton School Superintendent Kathy Smith, who, as of Friday, will be leaving the Brockton Public School System. And we'll talk a little bit about her 40 years as an educator and what her plans are moving forward. And then at 7:30, as though we haven't already had an entertaining enough show, we bring in Jerry Thornton from Barstool Sports and WATD sports reporter Brendan Conley to talk a little bit about the state of Boston sports.
Sounds like a great show.
It does. You know, you're welcome to kind of stick around if you want. I know that you've dealt with county folks in the past.
Can I fit in the same room with Dan Pallotta? I'm not sure.
I barely could get fit in the same room as Dan Pallotta. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I could fit in the same room as Dan Pallotta. His ego was the thing that I couldn't get by. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. Dan will let me have it when he walks in here. But we're looking forward to that conversation. So I'm going to put my directional on, pull over to the shoulder very safely, as we're going to find out one last time what's happening out on the highways and the byways. Checking traffic, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop. Online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and New Bedford.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. The best thing to light fireworks with is a fine cigar from Brennan Smoke Shop. See? You just touch the wick and there it goes. Oh, geez, the bottle fell over. Watch out! Watch out on the deck!
Nice job!
I probably shouldn't be doing this while holding a beer in one hand and a cigar in the other. Brennan Smoke Shop would like to wish you a safe 4th of July. Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop, and I'm proud to be an American. You know why? Rights, freedoms, and liberties. I have the right to say how I feel. I have the freedom to say it on this radio station, and I have the liberty of saying it while enjoying this fine cigar from Brennan Smoke Shop. Cheers to rights, cheers to freedom, and a hip hip hooray for liberty. Happy birthday, America.
Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we're into our first segment of Monday Night Talk. Representative, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's good seeing you. Saw you at the Mass Access Spring Conference, which they had in, was it Norwood?
It was well attended. Really well attended.
And I apologize because I should have said Legislator of the Year deemed by Mass Access, as you were recognized as a representative, a legislator who cares about what happens when it comes to community access, local television, knowing also you are the host of State Matters.
Yeah, it was actually a great honor. But, you know, I've been working at the PAC TV in Plymouth, doing a show since I became selectman in 2010. And I find it, I've done a monthly show ever since, and I find it's very informative for people, it's educational for people. And, you know, this fight about with the FCC about, you know, is public access going to continue? It's a real issue. There's going to be a meeting coming up in August, and we need to get people out there to say, look, we want to keep PAC TVs or, you know, all the community access. Yeah, we really need them. They bring a wealth of information to our communities. Think about selectmen's meeting, planning board meetings, and zoning board meetings. Those could all go away.
Hmm.
And how are people going to get their information?
And what's even worse is it'll make social media even more boring, because usually folks love posting little clips of those meetings.
Absolutely.
And then fighting endlessly about something that one of the elected officials had to say, or somebody in the audience had to say, or a particular item or issue.
Yeah, exactly right.
Social media do?
Yeah.
They should get involved in this too.
Yeah.
But that's not why we have you on. It was good seeing you. You had a chance to speak while you were there. You were actually on the panel.
Yeah, I was a panelist, yeah, with Peter Gay from North Attleboro, and Peter Foreman from the South Shore Chamber. And we did a discussing about how businesses and legislators and the importance of community access television, and how to get people engaged, how to get local legislators engaged in the process, and why it's important.
Now we have Mr. Matt Nelson, the Mad Dog, joining us. Matt was actually hanging out, as he works for Lowell. Lowell
Telemedia seems to be the way most access centers are going these days.
Okay. Good to know.
Was that the woman with the puppets? Was she from that?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
The puppets were very clever. Yeah, she had like these, with a lot of satire with the puppets and and elected officials. I can't wait for, it's Charlie, right?
Charlie Smith.
Charlie, who's actually the daughter of.
From Chelmsford, who's the daughter of Paul Sullivan, the former editor of the Lowell Sun.
Oh,
and he hosted a radio show.
A late night show on Big Signal on
WBZ. She's going to be thrilled that we're talking about her.
Yeah, I just thought that was amazing. I want to be a puppet.
Yeah, so she actually won.
I want to be a puppet up there somehow.
Speaking of access, she won a national hometown award from the Alliance for Community Media.
She's very talented.
Yeah, very clever.
Very talented.
But it's an interesting way to explain things and educate people, though, so it was very creative.
And as folks know, this little segment that we usually do at the onset of the program, usually I fondly call it the State House Report, because we usually get a lot of the elected officials from up on Beacon Hill. Last week we had the state treasurer on. We actually found out that the state treasurer, one of her earlier concert memories was going to Jimi Hendrix.
Is that right?
Yeah, the podcast is up, by the way. She goes, Kevin, do you ever go? I didn't even know what music was at that point.
David Bowie was mine. Boston Garden, yeah.
Let's Dance.
Yeah.
Aerosmith was mine.
Yeah.
Back in the Saddle Tour.
Hmm.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on up at the House. We probably should talk about first, though, Plymouth 400. What's the latest with that? How's that going?
My God, it's here now.
It's upon us.
It seems like we've been talking about this for years, but now it is upon us. The seven signature events are all set. The opening ceremonies are April 24th. There are over 130 sanctioned events as well are going to be happening and counting. We're working as we speak with MassDOT, trying to get train service down to Cordage now on the weekends starting in April. To bring more people down and get more people back. So it's it is real. It's happening. They're out there fundraising, getting as much money as they can to support the signature events. And the excitement is building. You can really feel it.
What's the conversation as to the logistics of the shuttles and stuff like that? Is this everything it's already been planned? Now it's a matter of seeing it come to fruition?
Yeah, it's still in the planning stages. It's been worked on, but now it's working out the kinks that I think they're doing at this point. I know they had some, they've been talking about security measures as well, so those meetings have been going on for a few years now, and they had another one last week as well. So, and we're still waiting to hear about a royal visit. Fingers crossed, and we really believe that that's going to happen, that we'll have somebody from the royal family that will be part of the festivities sometime in 2020.
Is there a pecking order would you take?
Well, it's funny. We've been dealing with members of parliament on this, and their parliament actually controls the royal family with the funding and all that, so they do have some say in it, but they are looking at somebody higher up. Obviously, it's not going to be the Queen. But there could be somebody,
Prince Charles.
Would you settle for
Prince Harry?
Harry, yeah.
They may not, knowing that they just had a new addition.
Yeah, but Harry and you get Meghan, that's from
Meghan Markle,
United States anyway, so that may be a perfect fit. So we're just kind of waiting to see. But we have confirmed that they have received the invitation from the governor, and we're just waiting to hear back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Governor Baker. I mean, did he pen this himself, or was it like a kind of like a group meeting with the press corps?
There was a draft that was put together, but then he put his own his own 2 cents worth on it, and then sent it off. Yeah.
Did he at least add in there that he's one of the most popular governors in
no,
the country?
No, he did not.
He should have used that. Yeah. That's clout.
He's kind of shy about that. He doesn't like really talking about that too much. He really likes doing the job. The guy's just a great guy. He goes into a meeting, he rolls up his sleeves, he takes out a pad of paper and pen, and he just loves the job. And that's what he likes doing. I think that's why he's just so popular.
See, right now I'm awaiting. I'm kind of in a neutral zone with the governor before I sway, because he still owes me a gold tie with giraffes and basketballs.
Okay.
He wore it to a couple of events, and I sat and I says, oh my God, I want one of those ties. My godniece loves giraffes, and so by proxy, I like giraffes.
Did he say
so? I said to him, I said, you got to get me one of those. He goes, and we actually had him on, I would say, 2.5 months ago. Yeah. And I mentioned to him, I says, could you get me one of those tires, Charlie? He goes, all right, we'll work on it.
I'll remind him. We meet on a monthly basis. I'll remind him.
Let him know. Kevin Tocci down at 95.9 WATD, who he comes on and talks about, and I call him the rock and roll governor, is still awaiting his giraffe and basketball's tie.
I'll let him know.
Because I actually said to him, I go, can I get a selfie? He was in Brockton. They were doing a groundbreaking for the garage. He actually, that was the first time I saw the tie.
Hmm.
I go, I love the tie. He goes, you're kidding. I guess so. He goes, it's my favorite tie. I go, it's my favorite tie now, too. So, let's talk a little bit about the priorities of the House. How are things going in regards to that?
Well, right now, as you know, we're working on the state budget. Just found out just a few minutes ago before coming on that it looks like we're not going to make July 1st. But there is
there's something in place.
Yeah, there's a $5 billion that the House and the Senate will probably approve on Thursday to keep it going through for the next few weeks. Nothing really It's in the conference committee, as you well know right now. But nothing major, really. The talks are going well. It's just taking some time. There's a lot of items there, a lot of issues in there. But we expect to be, you know, maybe by getting to the governor, hopefully by mid-July to get it to him. If not, second week of July, maybe.
Now, this has nothing to do with the hands-free cell phone bill.
That's a separate conference committee.
Well, I just want to make sure that's not something that's holding up the works as it being part of the fiscal 20 budget itself. So is it a matter of just any idea as to what the sticking points are? I know there was differences in regards to educational funding and conversations like that, and I'd be curious.
Keep it close to the vest, the six of them, which is probably the best way to do it anyways. But there were just so many differences between the House and the Senate budget in so many different areas. I think it's just a matter of taking time. But all reports are indicating, and people I've talked to in the conference committee are saying, that talks are going very well.
I will yield my microphone to the Mad Dog. Mr. Nelson, do you have a question?
Speaking of budgets and hot-button issues of the day, I got to ask about the MBTA. What's going on with that? Is the legislature stepping in to kind of, I don't want to say expedite, but help along the process of fixing it and then upgrading it to the point it needs to be?
No, actually, because the legislature actually did this probably 4 years ago. Where they have pretty much given it to the governor to actually, and the MBTA folks to really take it to the next level. But it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think the governor has always said that. It's an old system, and it really wasn't kept up. There wasn't funding put into it. Now funding's being put into it. There are a number of cars that are in order that you'll start seeing new cars coming online. Over the next, you know, probably 6 to 12 months, and then, you know, up to 2022, 2023 as well. So it's just taking some time.
Okay, we're speaking with State Representative Matt Muratori, representing the 1st Plymouth District, and I teased education at the tail end of you answering my question. Where do things stand with education, and how is what we could see in this budget going to help your district and other districts here on the South Shore?
Well, I think the good news is that everyone's talking about education on the Hill. And the education formula hasn't been reformed in 25 years. So it really needs to be reformed. So everyone's talking about it. Now, the question is, whose plan? Is it the House plan? Is it the Senate plan? Mm-hmm. Is it the governor's plan? And will it really help, any of those plans really help our districts in this area? A little bit, not a lot, though. What they will do is they will help the urban areas, the lower-income areas that really need the help. But we had a meeting in Plymouth a few weeks ago with members of the MTA kind of talking about it and really talking about how it's really not going to help our community, particularly my community, Plymouth. It doesn't really put a dent in what is really needed, looking at the costs that have gone up over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
The one thing I continuously hear, especially when we do political forums, or we're talking to folks who are potential candidates for office, or those who are in communities, or we just get done with town meetings in many communities, and one of the things that folks were saying was the things that are hurting school budgets are unfunded mandates, but I'm not hearing much as to any headway that's being made when it comes to eliminating unfunded mandates and finding ways to fund those requests that mm-hmm. are put on school mm-hmm. districts. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the formula comes in. The formulas need to be revised to do that. What some of these proposals do mm-hmm. is they actually help with special education, which is probably one of the biggest line items
yep.
in the school education budget. So you may see if with these budgets going through that it may help some of that. So it will indirectly help some of the unfunded mandate. But so when you look at the overall picture, communities like Duxbury and Marshfield and Scituate and Plymouth are really not going to see a big change in it with the way this is going. But we're hoping that this is just the beginning stage of talking about education reform over the next several years.
So many topics. I'll jump to housing. Lynn just saw an article, was the first community in the Commonwealth to eliminate veteran homelessness. Is the state kind of looking at them as a model to what to do for the rest of the state, or what's the legislature doing to kind of help help out with homelessness and especially veteran homelessness?
Well, I think the Baker-Polito administration has done a good job over the years with homelessness. They've when they came in, there was, I forget how many thousands of people that were in motels, hotels, and all that. So they've been able to help with a lot of that over time. Is there more to do? Of course there's more to do. There's more to do with housing in general and more affordable housing as well. The governor has had a proposal on the table for several months now, actually going into last session, to try to increase the housing production in our communities. And it's, again, another front burner issue that's in the House and the Senate as well. And it's a matter of getting, you know, a compromise in on what's going to be the best bill to actually get through so we can get more affordable housing.
And I think it's worth noting that when the governor kicked off this year, put forth his budget, one of the things he did talk about during his speech was the housing stock.
Mm-hmm.
Troubling numbers when it comes to the amount of affordable housing and enough housing here in the Commonwealth to suit folks who are looking for a home.
It's an economic stimulator, too, because if you have affordable housing, you get people that actually, you know, will stay in this area, live in this area, you know, live in the Commonwealth, not move out of the Commonwealth because it's too expensive, so we can get better productive workers to continue to enhance the economy.
Definitely something good to note. Did you want to follow that up, Matt?
Yeah, so Boston, title town, we just took yet another title away from New York and L.A. We are the most expensive state to live in and retire to. Do you see any legislative fixes for that, or as a personal opinion for that matter, how do we fix that issue and kind of help tie income to what the housing economy looks like?
Well, before I answer that, I saw something funny on Twitter last week or the week before. Right after the Bruins lost, I saw somebody that tweeted, they felt bad for the kids that are 128 days old because they haven't seen a parade.
It's torture. Torture.
I know. But I think it all ties into what you're saying. It all ties back to affordable housing. You know, it's difficult when you look at the minimum wage now going up. It's $12. It's going to be $15. So as that goes up, everything else goes up. We have people that are leaving Massachusetts because they can't afford here. So it all comes back to housing. So we have to make sure that we have affordable housing for people, whether it's workforce housing, whether it's for disabled people who can work, whether it's for, you know, elders who are still productive that can work. We still need to get that affordable housing and get that. I think it's 135,000 units of housing is what we're looking to get.
And on the other side, I know Cambridge as a city had a rent control measure in place. Is there something that could be done statewide as far as rent control goes?
Yeah, the first time I heard about that was actually today. I heard it on the news today that it's being, that, you know, there are people that are talking about it. Yep. Because New York actually has that. I personally don't think you'll see that in this session. I think everyone's working towards the housing, you know, solve that housing policy and the debt bill and get that out, and let's start moving that forward.
I don't expect you, Matt, to break out into happy birthday, knowing that the representative has a birthday party celebration coming up. It's also a re-election party. Are we getting out ahead of this a year and a half before?
Yeah, I wanted election? To, you know, I'm using the excuse of my birthday because to get people out and really just let people know that I'm back. I want to run again for another term. Again, talking about housing and education and health care. I mean, there's so many issues that we've been working on. I want to continue to see this fruition, you know, for the Plymouth and for our area, and particularly, you know, Plymouth 400 coming up, et cetera. So I really want to kick it off and really, you know, start going again.
Alden Park, what's that play? What's Alden Park like?
So Alden Park has it's in Colony Place off Exit 7, and it has a new room they've added. It's about 100, 150 seats, I think it is. So it's a nice little room off the restaurant part, and we're going to be in there. And we have a lot of people coming. It's going to be a good crowd. We have I saw this cool thing the other day with those living statues. So we're going to have a living statue there that
really
kind of moves a little bit. Yeah, so it'll be kind of cool. So, yeah.
Very nice. Yeah.
And we'll have all sorts of people from all around the South Shore actually there, and probably some of my colleagues from around the state will be coming as well.
Now, in lieu of flowers and gifts,
yeah,
You're just asking for a possible campaign contribution.
If they can. If not, we just love to have them here and enjoy the time with us.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
And as always, being one of the most active elected officials up on Beacon Hill, even have your own hashtag. Hashtag Muratori, the number 4, Plymouth. I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all about social media nowadays. You have to be in that medium. And I think it helped us in the last election to really, you know, we did the traditional mailings and, you know, knocking on doors and all that. But I think the social media, I think, you know, that really helped our campaign and get us over the top.
Again, transporting myself back to January during the Mass Creator Awards. That was one of the things that when they were getting ready to announce you, saying how very involved you are with social media and always promoting, and it isn't just yourself.
No,
there are
no.
other things.
Yeah,
when
I was gonna say that.
You know, when I have put something out there, you're quick to you know, to like it or to retweet it or
you know, we live in a society now where everything is so instant. People want to know what's happening instantly. You know, so anything good that's happening on the South Shore, particularly Plymouth, I'll send that out. What was interesting in that night in January. They told me that they went back 7 years on my Twitter account. I don't know how they figure this stuff out, but
goodness.
But I do I on an average of 35 tweets a day.
That's a good record.
Over 7 years.
I'm lucky if
period.
I do 35 tweets a month.
Yeah,
I would say that must be a record for a politician, but I know there's someone who loves tweeting almost as much as anybody else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder who that could be.
I think it's a good way to just get information out. I really do.
It absolutely is. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, I want to thank you for, you know, what you do, and particularly, you know, for the help that you've all been doing for Community Access TV, and I think we need to continue to get that word out there. As I said, I think there's a meeting early August that's coming up with the FCC that could eliminate funding for, you know, the Verizons and the Comcast and really hurt the community. So we really need to be proactive and get people out to help.
I remember, if you haven't seen the show, State Matters, starring one and only State Representative Matt Muratori on PAC TV, and I believe if you have Telview Connect, your community,
Mass Media Exchange, it's airing in Lowell.
Yeah, you can air it, and you can have your community just ask them and request, say, "Hey, upload State Matters with Matt Muratori."
Yeah, absolutely,
Representative. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
For coming
appreciate
in.
It. Good seeing you, Matt.
We are going to step aside just for a moment, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WBATV.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
The new patio at McWiggins offers al fresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch monitors and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
A part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Well, thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. You are listening to Monday Night Talk, and as is the case, if you miss any of our segments, you can always tune in to our podcast, available on the website. We are also available in iTunes. If you haven't yet, I ask you to follow the podcast, so when the newest ones are released, you're able to listen to them, whether they're you're listening to them in your car or your smart device. Our conversation for this segment, it's going to take a little bit of a county turn, as joining me in studio, we have Shannon Resnick. She is with Clark Balboni and Gil Day. She is part of the team that represents the Plymouth County. I think more so some of the county commissioners.
No, she represents the county.
And then you just heard which county commissioner she represents. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. And we have, I think he's the chair of the Plymouth County Commissioners, Dan Pallotta. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. We appreciate you having us on.
Well, as we like to do, when there are issues, there are items, the idea of this program is to be a sounding board. It'll allow folks to kind of talk about and discuss them to better inform and educate and provide transparency to the voters and the folks here in the county, which I think is 26 towns and one city.
That is correct.
I just wanted to check.
Although it's a question as to whether Bridgewater is now a city. It's technically a town, but it has a city form of government.
Well, I was thinking of Brockton.
Brockton's a city.
But that's what I said.
What is Bridgewater?
It's a town. They got a town council.
Yeah, it's called a town, but it's a city form of government. It's a tough question.
Are we here to debate that today? Are we here to talk about it? No, we are not. Because the idea of having you in here is I know that there is something that's bubbling to the surface at this particular time. In regards to the Sheriff's Department, I believe the Sheriff's Department on county land, is it?
Let's dial it back a little bit and let's talk a little history before I let the attorney go. For those that don't understand the process and are scratching their head as to why there's all this back and forth, it's really simple. The sheriff is an employee of the Commonwealth right now. He's no longer a part of the county system. He's just an employee of the Commonwealth, as is his department. During that bill that transferred the county's sheriff at the time, the county sheriff, over to the Commonwealth, there are certain parts and pieces that needed to be untangled. One of them is land. And
the county farm, to be specific?
Not only the county farm. I mean, the gun range has the same problem as the county farm does. And the county commissioners, to be honest, have tried really hard to try and untangle this web and have made many attempts to solve the problem and get this resolved. We deal with many governmental entities all through the Department of Capital Asset Management and Maintenance, formerly known as DCAM, once with the DA's office when they were in Belmont Street and three courthouses. So we're pretty familiar with how the state works.
Okay.
And you know, we need a lease to secure certain things. A year and a half or so ago, the 2020 committee came before the Board of Commissioners, informally and formally, to have an event. And we, of course, said yes. Of course, you can have an event on the farm. And during that process, we pushed really hard to try and get this lease thing resolved. It had been stagnant for 10 years. We're talking 10 years. Those who think that the commissioners are being unreasonable here, we're talking 10 years we've been trying to get a lease.
Okay.
So it's a requirement of the law that he gives us a lease.
So I would ask you, Shannon, what's the legalities behind this? Because to me, it's kind of like a big brother, little brother scenario here where the Sheriff's Department is now under under the control of the state, but that land, it's almost like the courthouses where you lease the courthouses. So what is the...
It's exactly like the situation you see with the courthouse. It's no different than any commercial entity which, you know, leases its building, but the building is owned by the landlord. And in all sense and purposes, the county commissioners through Plymouth County are the landlord and owner of the property. You know, I hesitate to call the sheriff a tenant because he doesn't have a lease. He's never had a lease. It's as if when he was part of Plymouth County, he was Corporation A. And then when he became part of the Commonwealth, he became Corporation B. Corporation A had the right to be there because they were part of the county. But as soon as they transitioned to the Commonwealth, Corporation B, you know, they've had no legal right to be there in the sense of they don't have a written tenancy. There's no even implied tenancy by agreement because there's never been any terms agreed to between the county and the sheriff's department.
So what is the process? What's going on right now? Where do we stand at this particular moment? And if you want to build it back as to how we get here in regards to the lease, have there been any documentation in regards requesting of the brokering of a lease for that land, whether it's the county farm,
so,
or if it's the... Shannon, you got really masculine real quick here.
So I'd like to take a shot at that if I can.
Okay.
Kevin,
please do so, Dan.
There's been a lot of back and forth between the attorneys as well as proposals from the Board of Commissioners. A lot of misinformation out in the press and Facebook and things like that. The primary issue that appears to be the sticking point is that the sheriff currently doesn't use the entire farm. He uses probably 50% of it, maybe 60% of it, roughly somewhere between 45 and 55 acres. The farm is 90 acres. And we have a 4-H program that's busting at the seams that needs space. So we put out a long-range plan to have the 4-H program on the farm by 2022, which is 3 years out. That's the crux of this problem. And the sheriff's saying, no, it's my farm. It's not your farm. It's my farm. And that's pretty much it. All this baloney about money grabs and stuff is minor. The rent, even if the rent was $100,000 a year for that piece of property, it would be a bargain. And it's not. We have money out there to deal with insurance needs that aren't there now, in anticipation of building up capital stabilization accounts. So it's not a money issue. It's a land issue, in my opinion. So, yeah, of course, I could be wrong. I think the councilor might agree with me and might not agree with me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the sentiments that I've been seeing is, you know, where is this coming from? And so in preparing a statement for the county this week, you know, I looked back in April of 2010, the state issued an audit report. And I'll just read to you what it says in there. You know, this is coming from the state itself, and it said, it should be noted that Plymouth County officials are insisted that the property known as the farm stay with the county and not be transferred to the Commonwealth. County officials believe that a lease agreement will be forthcoming between Plymouth County, DCAM, and the PSO, being the Plymouth Sheriff's Office. You know, so that's from 2010. So to act like this is something that has just come up and to interfere with perhaps summer operations, use by the public of the petting zoo and the farm stand this summer, it's just not consistent with the history of how things have happened.
And I believe in the release, there's something that's pointed out that this issue, a part of it is about public safety and liability. Can you explain that?
Sure, absolutely. So I think a lot of this, you know, people think that this is a money grab or an attempt by the county to focus on how much the value of the land is. But coming from the legal perspective, I've said for a long time now, I've been the attorney for Plymouth County for 2 years now, any of your properties that which you have tenants or you know, squatters or someone occupying the land, you have to have a lease. Any lawyer is going to advise any landlord that a written lease agreement is imperative to protect the legal rights of their clients, my client being Plymouth County. So to insist on a written lease is not an uncommon thing. And only, you know, one line in perhaps a 20-page lease agreement is going to talk about the rent amount. Everything else is going to talk about all those other legal terms that, you know, as an attorney, I want to see in there protecting my client.
But would it not be something that would be negotiated with the state and not necessarily, that would be like negotiating something with someone who's renting an apartment and not the person who owns the property? Why not negotiate with the state and not the sheriff's department?
That's a pretty interesting question, because the law requires us to negotiate with the Commonwealth. But at one point in time, the Commonwealth deferred to the sheriff. We don't know why. We guess they have that right, but I don't know. I mean, it's convoluted. When you get up to that big bureaucracy up there on Beacon Hill, I think we all know that sometimes things slip through the cracks, and this is one of those things. The commissioners have been incredibly patient for the past 7 years. The current board of commissioners have been together for 7 years. This is not something we wanted public. We didn't make it public. As you are aware, WATD broke the story by interviewing just one side of the equation. And it turned into this big story. But it's not something that normally happens. We have negotiations all the time with other governmental entities that don't end up like this. And making sausage in public sometimes is ugly.
Well, I will say this to you, though. The statement you just made, and I'm going to say this because you are talking here on 95.9 WACD. Now, you do not know as far as what the ingredients were in regards to that reporting. And so it's your perception at this particular moment that it was one-sided.
It's one-sided because the interview was done on a Friday and the report came out on a Monday, and no one from the county was contacted for a comment. That's okay. One-sided. Okay. Sorry.
Well, but we're one-sided. Not. Okay. But I'm gonna. I have to defend this line right here.
I get that you have to defend the parent company. I get it.
But I'm gonna ask you a follow-up question. Is this necessarily about a piece of property or a couple of pieces of property or two government entities, or is it about two strong-willed men?
Who are the two strong-willed men we're talking about?
Well, you're one of them.
Thank you.
And the other one is the sheriff.
I'll speak up on that, actually.
Please
as
do.
Legal counsel, I've been running the show as far as trying to negotiate a lease term. It's a three-member board, so any of the terms have to be by the majority vote or unanimous vote of the board. As far as the actual negotiations go, it was just myself and the county administrator, Frank Bradler, that had been involved in the actual face-to-face. And the sheriff actually gave that same courtesy. Those negotiations were between his legal counsel, attorney Patrick Lee. We've actually kept this entirely between the lawyers for almost about a year now. So as far as any strong-willed input, we really haven't had any issues with that.
I'll be honest with you. I get what you're saying, and I think that's a fair question. So I took myself out of it over a year ago. And the other commissioners were relieved that the chairman took himself out of it, because the other party does seem to get his hair up whenever I talk about the county farm or anything related to the operation of the Commonwealth. So I get it. So I took myself out of it. Okay. As a matter of fact, we even had an attempt at mediation by one of the state reps, and both the sheriff and the chairman of the county commissioners took themselves out of it so that there could be no ego involved, and that was fruitless also. So this is not something that is related to personality, in my opinion.
Okay. I'm going to ask Shannon another question. Again, we're speaking with Shannon Resnick. She is with legal counsel for the county. Dan Pallotta, who is the chairman of the Plymouth County Commissioners. There was a cease and desist that was issued, was there not? And
there's been two.
Okay. And so what is the protocol that follows after that? What can happen after that those are issued?
So, you know, I don't want to really, you know, play our hands too much on this, but we actually served a notice of cease and desist end of September 2018.
And what happened to that cease and desist?
It was apparently ripped up It was shredded.
Shredded by the chief law enforcement officer of the county of Plymouth.
You know that for a fact.
He is quoted in the ledger as saying that, which is really disturbing for a resident of the county, because that's something, you know, you hear in Washington that the FBI does.
Okay.
It's also interesting because notice to cease and desist are often documents that are served by the Plymouth County the sheriff department. So to shred a legal document to which you're appointed to serve is concerning. And that was something that we served back at the end of September. Through that, we started to negotiate, you know, maybe making a little bit more progress as far as exchanging, you know, some terms that were important to the county and some terms that were important to the sheriff. But ultimately, in April, the sheriff just has no intentions of entering into a lease agreement with the county. And so we had no choice to serve a second cease and desist letter. And we actually provided that the beginning of May. So they've had that for some time now. I think we made it formal at the end of May, but they've had a courtesy copy, perhaps maybe April of this year. So this isn't something that's creating an emergency. They've had this information for a long time. They've known that the order to cease and desist would be through June 30th, 2019.
We've just got a couple of moments left here in this segment. And again, I thank both of you for coming in and participating in this segment. Counsel, I got to ask you another question, and this is in regards to the cease and desist. What is a conservation restriction easement? What is that?
So the conservation restriction easement, I think the sheriff's using as a red herring to provide some sort of legal grounds that allows him to occupy land without a lease and to continue his farm operations. What that was, that was a consideration exchanged between the town and the county back in 2009. This was actually when the sheriff's department was part of the county. And what that document does is it limits the uses on the farm. And it provides that the county needs to use the land for farming purposes, agricultural purposes, things in that nature, so as to prevent the county from developing into, say, a shopping center. That document doesn't say that those operations have to be performed by the sheriff. They could easily be performed by the 4-H program, which was the entire intent of reserving some of that land for the 800 families that participate in the Plymouth County's 4-H program.
So I think one of my final questions, and Dan, I think you'll be able to answer this. I think another bone of contention is that we're talking about 90 acres. Is that an accurate number, estimate? That's
approximately.
The
property.
And this, I think that there's a concern by the county commissioners, according to this document I have in front of me, is that maybe not all of that space is being used, and maybe the county wants to have access to it.
Yeah, approximately 50 to 60% is being used by the Commonwealth, so we want access to the 20 acres. That's really the bone of contention, in my opinion. I do want to say before you close out, you know, Plymouth 400 has an event on here. This won't affect Plymouth 400. We'll find a way before that comes to have this resolved, so anyone who's got angst over that. And it's not the intention of the county commissioners to have the sheriff vacate the property. We love the sheriff's operation. He actually runs a pretty good show down there. That's not the intent. The intent is to do it legally. And as the chief public safety officer, he knows better, and he needs to sign a lease.
And I'll ask you, what do things stand, and what are we waiting for, in whether it's the next few days, the next few weeks, in regards to this situation? Is there anything pending at this moment?
So it's my opinion that the sheriff has a legal obligation to cease all actions that permit the public to enter the land after June 30th, 2019. He was served with a notice to cease and desist. He's calling it a notice to evict. This has nothing to do with him having to leave the property. It has to do with not allowing the public to enter. You know, so that's his order to follow. And that's where I would hope to see things go from the legal perspective. The county, like Dan had just said, is interested in having the sheriff continue to operate his farm stand and his petting zoo on the property, but not until there's a written lease and liability insurance provisions and indemnification language, the language that the legal side of things will insist on, and the state law tells the sheriff that he has to do.
You know, we are talking about the children. I want to make sure the children are protected. That's my job.
Well, and I'm going to ask you this question, Dan. There's somebody who, as you said, you've been in office for 7 years as part of the county commissioners, and knowing that it's been difficult to get the state to give you monies you know, in order to maintain the courthouses. What have you learned from that situation? And are you applying that to this situation with the county land?
Not even close to being similar. And first of all,
but you're dealing with the state.
No, I know that. But the county courthouse situation has been resolved.
It has.
It absolutely has been resolved, and we are very satisfied with our relationship with not only with DCAM but with the trial court. You know, we had our trials and trivialities. I think there was a little misunderstanding on both sides on procedure and what can and can't. And in the end, right now, the county of Plymouth is getting almost a dollar for a dollar. So we're pretty happy with where we are. And if you go into the courthouses, you'll see each one of them is slowly being renovated because we're taking advantage of that dollar for dollar.
Shannon, anything you want to say in closing as we wrap up the segment?
No, I just wanted to just point out that this isn't a money grab by Plymouth County. This was legal in nature, and this isn't something that just happened. You know, we didn't give 30 days notice. This is something that's been going on over a year. This is the second notice to cease and desist, the first one being served in September. So I understand that this might interfere with the public's use of the county farm, and that's not something that the county commissioners had wanted to see. But if there was any emergency created, it had nothing to do with the Plymouth County commissioners.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and discussing this issue in regards to the county property down there in Plymouth, and look forward to any further updates. You're welcome to come back on this program as well as utilization of the radio station, whether it's Monday Night Talk, the news department, or other radio programs. Again, the idea of what we do here is to provide transparency and at least get the issue out there. Don't look at me like that. If folks can't, I know it's not a visual medium, but if you saw the look that Dan gave me. But
their initial reporting wasn't fair and balanced. I'll say.
Again, we're not here to express opinions. We're here at this radio program, anyways, is here to give folks an equal opportunity to discuss this.
Which is why we're here, because we knew you'd be fair and balanced.
We are going to step aside. That is, we're going to wrap up this segment with Dan Pallotta and Shannon Resnick. Thank you both for coming in. And when we come back, the second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Searching don't go. For my lost sugar song.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
The new patio at McWiggins offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch monitors and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McWiggins Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back for hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Hope you enjoyed the first hour. Loved having Matt Muratori on. Nice having Dan and Shannon on as well. Good conversation. If you missed it, podcast will be up probably in the next 24 to 36 hours. We move on to hour number two, and later on this hour, we'll speak with Brendan Conley, who I see kind of roaming around in the hallway. He's already here. Jerry Thornton. But right now, we turn our attention to Brockton School Superintendent Kathy Smith, who is here in studio with us. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Christine James was joking, saying that you two were reviewing old report cards while you were waiting to come on the radio program. Is that true?
But they told me they were really good students. I told them I had my moments.
That's fantastic. So the word is out that you, as of this Friday, it'll be 42 years in the book for you.
It will. Yeah, 42 years in the Brockton Public Schools, 6 as superintendent. So it's a heck of a way to end a wonderful career.
What has it been like to be the head of this urban school district?
You know, I can't tell you going back 42 years ago that it was really something I thought of. I was one of those people that had opportunities throughout every point in my career to do exactly what I wanted, whether it was teaching kids, going on to get a master's degree in school adjustment counseling, and there were jobs in the district to support that. You know, being an adjustment counselor, I find myself involved in the courts and quickly realized that I thought the kids needed better representation and went to law school. You know, finished with my law degree and found myself back in Brockton during a time after ed reform where I always kid with Superintendent Joe Beige that, first of all, we had more money than we knew what to do with, and that was after the McDuffie case, really building a district, you know, summer programs, vacation programs, all kinds of after-school programs, and there were many jobs that I was able to do. Finally, finishing up 6 years ago and getting the opportunity, you know, to lead the district that I had been in for so many years, you know, lived in the city, brought my own children up and attended the Brockton Public Schools. It has been a wonderful opportunity. I can't thank the people enough for allowing me to serve them in that capacity.
Mr. Nelson, do you have a question?
Of course. Education is the hot button issue of today. So,
well, you are a product of the Brockton school system, aren't you?
I am. Class of 2011.
Then you can ask the next question.
Everybody can agree class of 2011 was the best class of all time.
We always say that.
Well, you might want to talk to the class of 2010 and the class of 2012. They might disagree with you.
Well, they're wrong.
Okay. Ask your question.
So education, hot button issue of the day. One of your defining moments as superintendent is the lawsuit or the prospective lawsuit against
Equity in education.
Looking at the Chapter 70 formula. So if you want to give a little bit of background on that, if there's any status update, I know every state legislator I talk to is saying we're working on it. It's in committee.
Well, I think you do have to go back to 1993. When you did have a Speaker of the House, a Senate President, a Governor, and all of your representatives who were on board for looking at a formula that was clearly broken. And you had at the time, and this is Superintendent Matt George, who was superintendent in Brockton, a hometown superintendent like I consider myself, and he quickly got together a group of urban superintendents that really had to take a look at how schools were funded to make sure there was equity for all students. And after the McDuffie case and the courts ruled that there had to be an adequate education for every child, you know, I was a teacher at the time, and I saw the difference that the funding made for students that could have been English language learners, special education students, children that were living in poverty, that needed additional time after school, that needed summer programs, that needed smaller class sizes, that needed innovation so that they could be successful adults, contribute to our economy. And we saw those changes over 25 years. So the problem is it's been creeping up for the past, actually 10 or 15 years. We have had fair warning that the formula that was built was a broken formula. And I really credit our state, our legislatures, because you go back to when I first became superintendent. I was very excited that statewide a committee was put together called the Foundation Budget Review Commission. And these were superintendents, these were elected officials, these were people from all over the state, budget people, policy people, that took a look. And right when Governor Baker came in, a recommendation was made that said, we can't do everything, but these are the top, you know, 10 solutions to the Foundation Budget Review Commission report that need to be implemented in order for all kids to have an adequate education. And here we are in 2019, and I sit here and we still have not implemented with fidelity those foundation recommendations. So, and I know you're well aware, we have been out throughout the state, and I'm really heartened that we have met in urban centers, we've been in suburbs, we've talked to rural centers, and people everywhere want to see this now, this legislative session, not only doing what they have to do to finish our state budget by July 31st, but to have a plan in place. And I am told that Speaker of the House, Robert DeLeo, has said, number one, it is on a front burner. There is no plan and no timeline, and that is what concerns me at this point.
Yeah, the burner's not even on.
So we have a timeline. It makes a difference when I have kids in Brockton. If you're entering kindergarten this September 2019, I can't have 27 to 30 kids in a kindergarten class. I can't have a class without a paraprofessional. I can't have curriculum for those children that, again, are getting prepared for an online high-stakes test. Like you just said, Matt, you know, you graduated in 2011. You had the resources that you needed, you know, appropriate class sizes. You know, we were struggling a little bit then, but we still were hanging in there as a district. So the time is now.
I think it's worth noting is every time we have an elected official, and I said this to Matt Muratori when he was here earlier, anybody who is seeking office, doesn't matter the level, if they're going to run for a local office, they're going to run for state, they're going to run for a federal office, they're all saying, oh, unfunded mandates, we have to do something. Oh, we could do something about special ed, and we got to take care of that. But yet, we do not see any movement. I know when the governor talked about, when he addressed the joint hearing on education, one of the things he said, he noted, was this, that during his tenure, his administration has put $500 million towards education. Is throwing money at the problem necessarily going to solve it? That's what I ask you.
Well, I wouldn't say throwing money at anything, because I know that I'm held accountable for every child, for showing that the child has made progress. If they're not, if a school is not making progress, we have to dig deep, look at what we call a turnaround plan. So we are accountable not only for every child, for every school, for every dollar that is spent, certainly in our district and all over the state. So I'm not going to say it's throwing money at it.
Okay.
But certainly I have looked at research, and research shows, you know, when you have, I'm going to say, a research-based curriculum product, teaching children to read, you know, children learning an English language, you know, learning phonics, you know, these are things that absolutely take money. And if you look at some of our wealthier counterparts, you know, they have plans in place to review curriculum every 5 to 10 years. They look at computers, the lifespan of a computer. So these are things, if the average span is about 5 years for, you know, the outdatedness of a computer, in Brockton we have computers that are in service that are 8 to 10 years old. Not every 5 years they come offline and you upgrade so that the kids are able to learn, research, you know, take their high stakes testing. So this is the difference with the haves and the have-nots. And very clearly, the state ruled with the SJC that an adequate education is an adequate education for the child in Wellesley or the child in Brockton or the child in a rural area. They should all have the same opportunity. So I don't see it as throwing money. You know, we're accountable for all of those things. We are very dependent on the state for funding, probably close to 80% of our funding.
Again, you're listening to 95.9 WATD, the show, Monday Night Talk, and we're speaking with Brockton School Superintendent Kathy Smith, who is here with us. Did you have a follow-up question, Matt?
Always. With education, I could ask questions.
Just remember, I gave you a bunch of questions. You, like, jumped down six from where
we
started.
I like to jump around.
Okay.
So you mentioned technology, computers, as it pertains to funding. There's two things that happened starting in the late 90s that I think play into everyone's budget issues. That would be the influx of technology into people's everyday lives. Cell phones, early 2000s, nobody had one in their pocket. And then a very large influx of immigrants and English language learners into the public school system. Do you think that kind of plays into how the 1993 formula ended up broken?
Oh, you know, I would say technology certainly has rapidly been growing, and it has been very difficult to stay ahead of it. You know, we have, and don't forget, you know, I consider myself after 42 years a veteran teacher. And although I try to stay up to date, you know, with technology, you know, certainly in my job, as do my counterparts that have been so-called veteran teachers, but you look at the young teachers coming in. You know, they have certainly learned with technology, as you said. You know, this is the life that they have lived as far as researching and having kids perform and having kids do video presentations. So we need to make sure a young teacher coming in has those opportunities, never mind for the children coming in that they're teaching. So it is a different generation. It has definitely, you know, added to everybody's budget, because let's remember, it isn't just bringing the technology, meaning the hardware. it's also bringing the instructional piece of that. You know, people that are working as, you know, teachers of teaching technology to our teachers. Or what about the people that have to maintain the technology that you have in a district our size, almost 17,000 students, and we are almost at a one-to-one ratio for technology laptops, et cetera, per student. And of course, we have to be with the online testing that we now have, you know, for our students.
If we can, let's take a little walk down memory lane. Fondest memory as an educator?
You know, I still think back to, and it's interesting, I've had so many kids that have come before me, and I have to tell you something that was very strange this past, I think it was Thursday. I walked into central administration, and as I walked into my office in Brockton, a parent of a student I had, and I had him for fourth and fifth grade, walked in to the office with me. She was with her daughter, and, you know, right away started to talk to me about remember those days at the old Winthrop School. As I walked in, and I can't imagine that this happened, another young woman who I had in that very same class, and now in her probably late 40s, you know, walked in, and I said, oh my goodness, Melissa Blackburn, you're one of my students. And talked to the parent of Earl Bowie, who was the other mother I was talking to. And while I stood there, a police officer that is now a school policeman, Darnell Campbell, walked in.
Oh my goodness.
And Darnell was one of my students at another school. And you look at that, and I was surrounded by three people that meant so much to me, you know, as a teacher. You know, kids that I worked with, that I enjoyed. I love when they say to me, do you remember when we did this in fourth and fifth grade? Do you remember when we had a Thanksgiving celebration? Do you remember when we brought all families in and did an international day? And when kids tell you what a great time they had in your class, and they remember something very positive, that was everything I could have imagined last Thursday to really define, you know, what I feel about the Brockton Public Schools.
Have you over the years found yourself hoarding keepsakes, maybe something because myself, I would be that way. If knowing that someone made something special as a teacher and gave it, are you one of those people who, if a student went out of their way, no matter how many students, you'll do what you can to hold on to it?
Okay, so you and I did not have a conversation about this ahead of time, but can you imagine cleaning out your office?
No.
So I'm at Central Administration, and my wonderful husband, Jerry Smith, who was an educator for 37 years, retired for 9, decided to come in and was helping me. And I have a box, and two things stand out, and they were gifts from kids. And one was this little globe that had a rose in it from Garrett May, and another one was a little Hallmark plaque that said, you know, to a wonderful teacher, had a little poem from a young man named Charles Pierce. And my husband is like, what are you going to do with these? And I said, but this means something. I mean, I can still picture these young boys, you know, giving me these very special gifts that meant so much to them. So I won out at this point. I'm not sure for how much longer I'll be able to do that, but I have a lot of very special memories.
So you've been at pretty much every level of the Brockton Public Schools, including student, no?
I was not. You know what? It's the paper recently did a wonderful article, and I do call myself a hometown superintendent. But the one thing I made clear, and I think it made it sound like I grew up in Brockton, and actually I did in one way. So I grew up in Randolph, and my parents sent me to Cardinal Spelman when I was a ninth grader back in 1969. And Randolph then was kind of a little bit of a sleepy town, you know, very different now. And Brockton was alive. It was the place you went to shop. Mm. It was the place you went, your grandmother would bring you to go visit Santa Claus. It was the place you would go to see a movie. You know, that's where you went, was to Brockton. So when I went to high school, I loved being downtown. I loved the vibrancy of learning about the Swedish bakeries, and here's where Rocky Marciano grew up, and being Italian, that was the Italian section of Brockton. And I knew people that lived up in the village, the Lithuanian section. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was exciting to me. Brockton was a very different place. And when I had the opportunity to teach, and I remember at the time they weren't hiring a lot of teachers, it was right before Prop 2.5. And my dad said, my dad was very involved politically. He was president of the firefighters later on. But he said to me, Kathy, you know, Randolph, you know, you've got a special ed degree. And all I wanted was Brockton. So mm-hmm. when I was hired in 1977, it really was a dream come true.
So before you, I know you got a question percolating over there. Did you ever go to the Stetson?
My father did. I went to a Catholic school in Randolph, but the Stetson School was where my dad went.
I went to the Stetson, which is now the police station, right?
It is. It's their town. It's their town hall. So I think it has the police station, the town hall. You're right.
I'm going to make a small admission. That's where I learned how to lip sync.
At Stetson School?
At Stetson School, because they would have you go to choir, and I would stand next to the loudest kid because I hated the sound of my voice singing, and I didn't want to scare the other children. So I stood. That's where I learned how to lip sync, Stetson School.
Good school.
Very good school. Good, Matt.
So you can kind of answer with an asterisk. What was your favorite level of Brockton schools? Student, teacher, administrator, or any of the various administrative roles you've held over the years?
I can answer that actually right away. And I have to tell you, there was some fear involved. So I was an elementary teacher to start, and I had been in a number of schools because, as I mentioned, Prop 2.5, and I was that group of teachers, that young group, that every year got a pink slip because of the uncertainty of the budget. Fortunate that I had a special education certification and was hired back each year. And one year, my husband finally said to me, he was on the negotiating team, and he said, Kathy, there's a special ed opening coming at the junior high. If that opportunity happens, you need to take it. And I couldn't imagine leaving the young children at the elementary school. I took a job, and of all places, it was East Junior High.
The best junior high school in Brockton.
Well,
If you know Brockton, it was West is best and East is least. And I have to tell you, and I went there in 1982. I did have a special needs class of kids that had serious reading disabilities. They were good athletes, mostly boys. And it was the best, and I was there probably for about 10 years. And it was the best educational opportunity for me, and it was a stretch. It wasn't my comfort zone, but I felt those kids really needed people that were involved with them, building self-esteem. I got involved very quickly in the student council. I made sure that I would be involved in kids' lives. I did peer groups. I coached cheerleaders. I did whatever I could beyond the classroom to make sure that the kids that I was teaching had opportunities to be part of that junior high, because they came from all over the city, the class I had. But they also had the best teachers at East Junior High. And I used to say that when I owned a home in Brockton, and we had bought a home on the west side, actually, that I would send my kids to East Junior High.
Aww.
East Eagles.
The East Eagles.
Best junior high in Brockton.
Yeah. We didn't have a name for our, when I went to North, we didn't have like a name. It predated before they started having the different.
Well, now Knights? It's the North Stars.
Oh, Stars. They went to Stars. That's
we
right.
weren't Stars. But I had Mr. Chapman as a music teacher who was awesome.
Yes.
Let me see. Was it Ahern?
Betty Ahern was the principal. She was one of the few women principals back in that day. You had Dr. Appling at the high school.
I had Dr.
Appling. Appling.
Yeah,
and you had Betty Ahern, and that was it.
But she was also, where else was she? Was it St. Patrick, or there's another
St.
school?
St. Coleman's that was.
St. Coleman's.
Actually, public school, but
St.
using.
St. Coleman's, that's correct.
It's at the east side on Lyman Street?
That's exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah, because I had two bouts with her.
Public school.
Yeah, I remember her fondly. Because when I got to middle school, she goes, oh, you again. She remembered me.
The kids used to love
Mr. Butler.
Because she wore beautiful gold bangles, but they could hear her coming.
Oh, all day long.
She was great.
So, word has it that while you're going to be leaving the Brockton School District, you're going to be helping out another community as kind of a bridge in leadership. Up in Salem. Talk to us about that.
Well, I'm not going to tell you it was my plan. I kept kidding that I was hoping on July 1st my feet would be in the sand. We do have a summer home in Falmouth, and I haven't been able to spend much time there. My husband loves it. It's a nice getaway. And I met the mayor of Salem, Mayor Kim Driscoll, on a number of occasions, probably during our equity tours. I know we served together on a number of panels. And she and I had a conversation. They are looking early in the fall to do a search for a permanent superintendent. It's very difficult when you get to the end of a school year. You know, superintendents have moved. People have hired superintendents. It's a difficult time to hire. So I went and visited Salem. It is a beautiful community. I loved their downtown. It was vibrant. Pickering Wharf, you know, lots to do.
A lot of history.
So I am going to go there for this next year. I see it as an adventure. I think they have a great school district. It reminds me in some ways it's smaller than Brockton. But they have a lot of English language learners, a lot of proud Salem residents that have been there for years, you know, similar to how we feel in Brockton. So I hope I can contribute and work closely with their school district as they prepare for a new superintendent.
And talk about the transition in Brockton. Mike Thomas, who was your assistant superintendent, kind of filling the void in providing that continuity. Talk to me about the challenges moving forward for the city of Brockton.
Mike loves to talk about the fact that when he came on as a brand new teacher in 1993, we both taught together at East Junior High School. So that's when I first met him. I probably had at that point probably about 15 years on him already in the school district. He was a wonderful young teacher at the time. He had actually come from the east side of Brockton, grew up there. He is truly a Brockton kid. And he was one of those people that the kids gravitated to. He was good with people. He cares about the district. His family has been very committed, you know, to the city of Brockton. George Thomas has a field named after him. That's at right. The Baker School, his dad.
Very dedicated to city sports, right?
Always. Yep. Wonderful, wonderful family. So when I think about Mike Thomas, you know, coming into this role, when you are a team, you go through the highs and the lows. We have had a lot of struggles. And yet, I appreciate his advisory. I appreciate his loyalty, his support. We have lots of sometimes very difficult conversation. So he will be an excellent addition, leading as the new interim superintendent. And Brockton is all that much better because of him in that position.
So after you serve a year in Salem, do you have any visions as to what you'll do with your own time?
I think I'll always be involved in education in some form, whether that is, I think the thing I found interesting when I became superintendent, I was really fortunate to have a mentor, and I wasn't sure what that meant. They have something called the New Superintendent Induction Program, which you come on board, they put you through a year of really some training. You know, how do you transition into the job? How do you do a strategic plan? How do you develop an executive team, a strong leadership team? How do you support principals? You know, how do you deal with a school committee? So all of these things, I'm not going to say it comes naturally. So that to me was really important. I had a fabulous mentor, a fellow named Jim Marini, a former superintendent around the state, who has since retired. So I can see that as my role in the future, you know, looking to support, you know, other superintendents or other people in leadership positions. You know, I do think I am a very different person. I don't know if that's good or bad than I was 6 years ago. You know, when you are a superintendent, and I'm speaking to all my superintendent colleagues, I am so proud to have served with the superintendents on the South Shore. We have a strong South Shore Superintendent Roundtable. I want to shout out to all of them, because it doesn't matter if you're a large district, a medium-sized district, or a small district. Sometimes it truly is alone at the top, and it's great to be able to reach out and have those people that are dealing with very similar issues, you know, to share best practices, to share solutions, to have a group that you can actually ask for help and have that support out there. So I was very, very fortunate in those years to have that.
Last question, Mr. Matt Nelson.
What are you looking forward to the most when you finally get a vacation?
Oh, boy. You know, I used to golf, believe it or not, and I would golf a couple of times a year.
What's your handicap?
I don't have a handicap, but they would make fun of me if it was the best ball. And there's actually a golf tournament, a firefighters golf tournament named after my dad.
Very nice.
And it's a scholarship for kids. So, and this has started since 1988, I think was the first year we had it. And I would be placed on a team with all guys. And I loved it when they had to use my drive sometimes. So I had the long game, the short game I wasn't great at. So I definitely want to be better at the short game and maybe beat my husband.
See, I can see you reading the greens and doing okay.
Well,
me,
gonna,
not so
I'm
much.
I'm going to give it my best. So that's something I'd like to. And my daughters both live out of state. So I don't have grandchildren yet. I have a grandpuppy. But, and my mother, 84 years old, Marie Alward, wonderful. I'd love to be able to really spend time with those people I care the most for.
Well, if you do end up staying invested when it comes to the equity and education lawsuit or becoming a mentor and you're down here on the South Shore, we'd love to have you in studio again. Heck, you can even serve as co-host like Matt Nelson here does from the East Junior High.
It's going to be all state legislators Eagles. As guests, though. I really want to see you grill them on equity and education and funding.
Maybe she might want to come in and have a good conversation.
Well, you know, I can't thank you enough, Kevin. We go way back to the Brockton days. You were always there to tell the stories. Sometimes they were difficult stories.
They were.
But you
they
were always are. There, and, you know, you certainly were supportive, gave us a voice. And I thank you for that. I've been here with school committee members. It doesn't matter if we have advocacy or special events. You're always there, and I thank you. And, Matt, always enjoyed working with you.
We wish you the best of luck up in Salem, but I'm sure you're not done with being on this radio program. So we'll keep a seat and a microphone waiting for you.
And I appreciate it.
You got it. And we're going to step aside. Final segment on deck in just a moment. You're listening to 95.9 WATD Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a
douche. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Some years ago, in the city of Boston, a local politician took advantage of a fortunate coincidence. His name just happened to be John F. Kennedy. The same name as you know who. Now, each election cycle, he never advertised. Not a sign to be seen, no speeches, no campaign, no problem. He never lost. What's in a name? Well, sometime later, a fed-up citizen legally changed his name so as to become a certain winner on the ballot. What was his new legal name? None of the above. Yeah, he changed it to that. Of course, the clerk wouldn't put him on the ballot.
Hi, I'm Peter Brown from Tiny & Sons Auto Glass. As you know, we work with all the elected officials who are involved in community service. They're actually a hard-working bunch, and they really do their best. And so do we.
The new patio at McWiggins offers al fresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends, try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch monitors and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McWiggins Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, final segment of Monday Night's Talk. Great having Kathy Smith in from Brockton Public School System. Superintendent, last day this Friday. So we look forward to hopefully hearing from her on the other side, whether it's talking a little bit about golf or her role in leading other educators into the 21st century. Now, we turn our attention to sports. And, of course, now before we get started here, I have to bring out my lucky charm because hopefully the conversation. Jerry's like rolling his eyes.
Whoa, here he... Hey, Kevin, put that back. Put that away.
It's a bearded Tom Brady. I knew
oh,
that.
Oh,
I
it's knew. A Funko, everybody.
It
okay.
It is.
All right.
A Funko
yeah.
Pop.
Okay.
With Tom Brady sporting the Giselle Let Me Grow This Much of a Beard. Look.
Oh, that's... I'm so relieved.
I knew you'd
when you were reaching in, I thought it was like, you know, going to be one of those Blazing saddle scenarios. Let me whip this out. Whoa!
Hey, now. Yeah.
But all right, I don't have that Funko. I've got the one of him in the helmet, like straight up regular Tom Brady.
Is that not awesome?
That is those things are phenomenal. The most recent one I've seen is Quint from Jaws halfway down the shark's mouth.
They're clever, and you know some of them are worth money to collectors. There are collectors who love these things.
And you and is this just the state?
This is one of
Torah,
many. Actually,
right? There's not like a gift for coming.
No, this is your gift right here. This.
Oh my God, a scary clown. Yeah, okay, yes. thanks very much. I'm so afraid of clowns. Having seen the movie It, I'm now also afraid of pronouns. Like, I won't, her,
knowing
of
your Irish heritage, I thought it's a lucky leprechaun.
Yeah, no, that is nightmare fuel. Speaking of lucky leprechauns.
The idea is to talk a little bit about the state of Boston sports, knowing that we are on the cusp of something that some of the younger folks don't realize, because we could end up going back into the dark days, knowing what's happened with the Boston Celtics. Oh my God, anybody who watched the Sox over the weekend are going, oh my God, what the hell's going on? Patriots on the cusp, even though Bill this year is going to be not only the defensive coordinator, but he'll also continue to be the general manager and the head coach. Tom is 42, coming up on 42. And the Boston Bruins not able to beat St. Louis Blues in their own building. These are dark days.
So what you're saying, Kevin, is abandon all hope, everyone. It's the death of truth. There is no God. Everyone just this is it. The end times are upon us.
No. Jerry, I would never say that to you, a gentleman who has written two books. Let's not forget, author of two books, right? Darkness to Dynasty and Five Rings. Yes. I would hope, one would hope, that you'd be working on a trilogy, either Six or Seven Rings.
Yeah, I was just going to skip right ahead. head to seven. No,
and of course, the writer for Barstool Sports. Of course, Brendan Conley, who is able to attend sporting events like the press conferences for the Celtics and for the Bruins. And did you do anything in regards to the draft, seeing that we got like a plethora of new talent for the Celtics, seeing that they're not going to have any high-priced free agents?
I was able to attend NBA draft night at the Celtics facility, the Auerbach Center. Have you been to that place? It's unbelievable what they've done with it.
I want to know if you get a straight answer out of Brad Stevens. Did he lock eyes with you, or was he looking everywhere else going, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Kyrie. I hope Al comes
back. As we all know, here's what they do on NBA draft night, which I find kind of annoying at times. They can't officially announce these trades for another week or two. So you have to say a proposed
asinine
deal. You know, exactly. Yeah. And like everyone was asking about the Aaron Baines deal, like when the Celtics dealt him to Phoenix along with a pick for the 33rd pick. And everyone's going like, what's going on here? Is this official? Is he gone? Can't talk about it. Whereas the NFL draft, as Jerry knows, they announce it right away. They quickly change all the graphics, and they go right into the say, "Hey, see, Team A did deal with Team B."
You get to what Jerry Thornton does. He's sneaky fast. He'll like ask a question about Bon Jovi, then ask a quick hitting question, right?
No,
like when he's talking to Bill Belichick, "So I heard John Bon Jovi was by your house playing in your back lawn. What's going on with Gronkowski?"
No, actually, I just stick to that stuff. I just once I'm done talking about Bon Jovi getting a doctorate from Penn University, I'm kind of done. All right, Bill.
Actually, there's like a bet. There's
just
a
pull
bet
them in with the feeling.
There's a bet amongst them all on the pirate ship whether what is the first, second, or third joke that'll get Bill to smile. Will he crack a smile on the first joke, the second one?
He and I have a rapport because I feel like I'm there coming from a place of love. Right, I'm not sitting there like Shaughnessy, ready to empty the chamber and then throw the empty gun at him. Like, tell us about Malcolm Butler. Right? You're like, I'm not going to answer that. We're already talking about. You're not answering. You keep answering it. Like, yeah, I'm not some grandstanding buffoon. I'm there to have fun and occasionally ask a perfectly legit, insightful question. But to get into what Brendan was saying, the NBA basketball is a great sport. They have the most recognizable stars in all of pro sports. They've done an amazing job of marketing themselves, but they've taken so much of the fun away from fans with this Byzantine nonsense that nobody can understand. No one understands the salary cap. No one understands how a trade works. And I hate to be an old guy, but the beauty of it back in the day was Red Auerbach was a million times smarter than everybody else and had figured out all the angles, and he was like a pool player who would like knock in his ball and then hit it off of that bank and knock in another ball and then give himself a good leave. Now, nobody can follow it.
And you also have all these crazy salary cap hidden rules, like the Rose Rule. Like, there's a reason the Celtics can't bring in this guy, because they have Kyrie Irving on the roster. Until he's gone, you can't bring in Anthony Davis, or you can't bring in this Max guy. That there are so many hidden rules that you don't know about. That's the one. That's my one complaint. Other than that, I think the NBA is a great product, up and on the rise, and I think they can learn a lot from the NFL when it comes to the draft.
Yeah, marketing it in a way that is understandable. That it's not a lot to ask to say, all right, let's pick a team at random. I'm a Phoenix Suns fan. They draft a guy. Ouch. I want to know whether I can be excited about the guy. You know what I mean? Oh, my God, I feel good about that. But no, how many times they make a trade and they throw it in this other guy who's making a max contract and, by the way, just lost his leg in a kiln explosion or whatever. Yeah, but that's good because he's got an expiring contract, so he's desirable, so we're going to have him. We're going to stash this guy, send him to Europe until he grows his leg back. And it's like, what? Like, I don't get it. Why did it just be, did you get a good player in return? Did you give up a draft pick? What is it? My other problem with the league is the fact that players have now full autonomy to build teams. You know, the Celtics have done every single thing right, every step of the way, and now have nothing to show for it. The Lakers are terrible. They're mismanaged. They have no general manager. They have bad ownership. They have no coach. And yet, everything is working out for them. You know, it's Max Bialystock. You know, we got the wrong script, the wrong director, the wrong actor. Where did we go right? And now they're probably, they are right now, I think, the odds-on favorite to win the title next year.
I'd say they're up there, because we don't know what's going to happen with Golden State. We still have another couple days till free agency really kicks off.
Yeah.
And we don't know. Well, I still don't think Kevin Durant's going to have much of an impact on next season after his major injury.
No.
But, you know, even still, you just look at the market. I think the Lakers, as you just mentioned, definitely have a chance to make noise now. Question is, how will the rest of the league shake out? Celtics specifically sticking to this market. You know what? As tough of a position they're in, I still think they can finish third or fourth in the East, just based on, you know, the rest, how bad the rest of the field is. What do you think?
What do you think as he points to him here? I didn't call him by name.
Because you've been quiet all night.
Listen, his name is Mad Dog, okay?
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog Russo Jr.? Is that what we're going to call
him? Mad Dog, yes. Matt Nelson.
Nelson. I'm the original
Mad
Dog.
No one's ever
Dog.
Tried that in sports talk radio. Never.
I'm the first Mad Dog. It's
you mean
I'm
in the Boston area? You mean the Boston area.
Trademark.
You obviously don't listen to Sirius Radio. Okay.
All right. And I'm going to go by the name Opie. How is that? While we're all... No, I'm sorry. But yeah,
wait, the TV one or the radio one?
I want to hear your take, though.
So you guys got me thinking. I want someone to explain to me how the Lakers screwed themselves out of $6 to $8 million in salary cap with the Anthony Davis trade. I saw somewhere if they waited till July 1st, they'd have X amount of space, but they didn't. Now they're trying to recoup some of it.
What, by renouncing players? Like, that's the thing to do to be able to create a little bit of a windfall, to be able to sign off to another player?
Well, LeBron traded everybody that wasn't LeBron. I mean, right. Rob Pelinka traded everybody that wasn't LeBron. And now they've got Anthony Davis. They've got so many roster spots left to fill and no salary cap space left to do it.
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. There are people who are really good at capology, and I feel like I just designate it to them. You know, they're like the Google of that. In football, it's Miguel who runs Pat's Cap. I don't research stuff. I just go with what he says, and he could probably just be making up numbers, like, you know, like how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. And I just go, if he says it, it must be true. I don't get capology. I don't know. All I know is the Lakers got the most desirable guy in the game when they have nobody in charge of that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Danny Ainge doing his due diligence, making smart moves, passing on Markelle Fultz to draft a guy who's been way better, gets his superstar, signs some free agents, and now his best player is Gordon Hayward. His best player. He should be their third best, and suddenly he's your superstar?
Yeah.
It's bad. Just a bad situation.
I wanted to bring up another topic here, and just harking back to your point, I think there was a clause in possibly in Davis's contract where if they had waited a little longer, they could have gotten him at that cheaper rate, and they would have had $8 or $9 million extra dollars in cap space, then they could have brought in a Kemba Walker or somebody that would have put them over the top, and literally made them the favorite to win the NBA title. Now it's still in flux.
But is Boston no longer that that sought-after landing
spot? That was my next point, was... you know, until
I'm trying to bring us all to. I don't care about the rest of the teams.
I don't care
about the rest of the cities.
We're just talking about the hot topics.
We're talking about. No, I want to talk about Boston sports and the concern that.
Sure.
Okay. The reason why the Bruins made it, why they made it to the Cup, you had no Washington, you had no Tampa Bay.
There was no one in your way.
Sure. Nobody in your way. They were all eliminated. You had a clear path to drinking out of the cup.
Yep.
And what happened?
Ran into. Oh, right.
A little cute round faced girl was the one thing that stood in your way. The lucky charm of the St. Louis Blues.
What was her name? Was it Layla?
Layla.
Okay. That was the one saving grace of the whole thing. You saw the video of her and you just said, "Okay, this will be something that'll help me wake up in the morning."
But, you know, and I'm sitting here unsure if this team can make it back next year, the year after, knowing that they had suffered back in 2013, they had lost. Who was your goalie? Tuukka Rask. Who was your goalie in 2010 when they were up 3-0 over Philadelphia and lost 4 in a row? I'll never forget. I don't care if you won the cup the next year, because you had Timmy T, who's in the bunker somewhere in Colorado
now. Or Idaho or wherever.
Whatever. He wouldn't come out and wave the banner for Game 7. Yeah, well, this is the conversation I want to hear. Is this when's the next Duck Boat Parade? Because I don't know if we're going to have another. The only outside chance we have is the Patriots.
Look, I wouldn't sell the Red Sox short. I mean, it's really hard to repeat in that league. Obviously, I mean, MLB, the last team to repeat was the Yankees in the late '90s, right? The 98-99. Yeah, because 2000 they lost to Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson, right?
No, Diamondbacks. That was
2001. Okay, so maybe
it was 99
and 2000. But look, the Sox, as we speak, are a game out of the playoffs. You know, I mean,
everyone wants to sell too. That's
out of the wild card. Yeah, it's too early.
Sure, and I know that's not ideal, but you know, it's not exactly like. This is the Bobby V year, you know what I mean? It's not like they're swimming for the bottom, and they've gotten hot at times. Yes, they don't seem to be able to sustain it for these long runs, and we're, you know, more or less halfway through, and they're going to have to put together, you know, a really stellar month before they're given, you know, the Yankees are hearing footsteps or whatever. But, you know, it's weird. Their problem is a bullpen. Which to me is, well, you talk about a crapshoot and, you know, how much luck is involved in, like, you know, building an NBA team. A baseball team, how many times have they gone in with a terrible bullpen and they pitched lights out for a season? This year, they were a question mark, but it's just been a disaster. I think they've had like 15 blown saves and 31 opportunities or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Not that Craig Kimbrell is going to weave any magic for the Cubs and have a sub-2 ERA and be their saving grace.
Yeah, I think there's such an element of just luck to it. It's alchemy. And a perfect case in point, 2013, they end up with their fourth option at closer, and it's Koji Uehara, who pitched incredible. He had maybe the best season any closer they've ever had. So it's not always this star that you've developed like a Papelbon. Sometimes you just pull a horseshoe out of your butt, and they have no horseshoes.
Papelbon, who was a converted starter, you know? He was a converted starter. It converted him into the best spot that he ended up in.
Which brings us to the next point. Maybe if Nathan Eovaldi gets healthy, they could find a way to insert him into that closer role. Guy who throws 100 miles an hour.
They need a fifth starter right now.
Yes, they do definitely.
They need a fifth starter.
They need as much help as they can get in the pitching department.
Instead of some schmo in Pawtucket that, you know, they're going to call up and he's going to get, you know, clobbered in the first three innings, and then the bullpen tries to patch it together, hoping that the bats on the bench are going to do something.
Right.
But, lest we forget, up until about 3 weeks ago, Dallas Keuchel was a free agent.
Yeah, where is he now?
Atlanta.
Right? Atlanta. Hotlanta right now.
It's another weird thing that's going on with baseball, how the free agency season is non-existent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's a start of it, nobody makes a move, it's all just crickets, then months go by, and then one top guy will go, and then another top guy, and you know, and then you have the season starts, and a guy's like Kimbrel is unemployed, and I don't, for the life of me, I can't get it. It used to make sense to me. And maybe I'm just getting old and cranky, or maybe I've just been spending like too much time on Netflix and I'm getting dumber. I don't know.
Don't hate on Netflix.
I love it. Maybe I'm not paying enough attention to sports, and everyone in your listening audience is sitting there going, well, I can figure it out, and here's how the NBA cap works or whatever. I don't know.
No, wait a minute.
Are we good with Kyrie Irving being public enemy number one around here for a long time?
Yeah, he still thinks the earth is flat. I'm okay.
Oh, yeah. Just keep walking.
Checked out his Instagram photos lately?
Yeah. I pay no mind to him because he needs to reunite with King James and try to win another title.
I don't know if he's going to do that.
He's better as a complimentary big name and not someone who's going to lead, because he couldn't even corral the young folk he had with him. Yep. The young stars. He wasn't somebody who was a motivator. If anything, he was more of a detractor to the whole system.
Kendra Perkins said it best. He says, Kyrie thinks he's Batman, but he's just Robin.
Mm.
No, I like Robin. You know, no, not to skip Barrage and Dick Grayson, or the great, who played him? Adam West and
Burt Ward.
Yeah. I love Robin, but you know what? Nobody wants him to be your number one.
Yeah.
And
put some duct tape on that thing.
Yeah, and at least he was a team player. Like, Kyrie's thing was, when things weren't going well, just pointing fingers at the young guys and then talking about him being a leader. As in the words of Tywin Lannister, any man who says, I am the king, is no true king. You know,
if you have to tell yourself you're a leader.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. And again, the voice you're hearing, Matt Nelson, Brendan Conley here from the WATD Sports Department, also a Boston Herald. And, of course, the legendary, the one and only Jerry Thornton. Jerry Thornton, who is tweeted about by when he strikes fear in the eyes and the keyboards of writers like Ben Volen, who's, you know, afraid to even utter your name or type your name on Twitter because of all of the folks who follow you. That means a lot, especially if, you know, you don't even combine Jerry's name and Nick Caseria. Don't do that.
Should we tell that story?
I served it up on a platter for you.
Yeah. Okay. So, by way of background, there's a report that the Houston Texans sent one of their guys who used to be the Patriots, like, team chaplain or morality coordinator or whatever, who left last year in a huff over Mr. Kraft getting a massage. So he leaves. Good riddance to you. Comes back to get his championship ring at Mr. Kraft's house and starts recruiting Nick Caserio, who the last I looked was under contract to the Patriots, to come be the GM of the Houston Texans. So Ben Volen, a couple days later, tries to do what the Boston media does, which is spin this into, this is a sign of how dark and terrible things are in that office. They've torn up the carpeting and put in the sluice grated floor from a slaughterhouse for all the bad blood going on there. And, of course, the next day he goes on Houston radio and says, well, that was just my opinion. Okay, he said Caserio wants out no less than four times in the article. He said, well, that was just my opinion. So I call him out on that. And
the next day,
at being part of the Barstool universe, when you're protecting the team against the media, the monkeys fly out of the witch's castle and dive on him and pull the stuffing out of his shirt. And so Foles on the morning show on EEI the next day just saying, like, well, why didn't you change your tune on this? Because now you're saying it's fact, but then you say it was your opinion. He says, I didn't want to deal with the Jerry Thorntons of the world. And, you know, Twitter is a cesspool, and it's really hard, and so I just, you know, backed off my language, but I'm telling you that it's fact. Like, okay, sure. Yeah.
And that was the moment that I actually tweeted Jerry, go, Jerry, I can have you on the radio show. We're going to talk about the state of Boston sports.
I mean, the state of Boston sports media is that a guy like me, you know, just an ape who's like, you know, burping the alphabet into my keyboard every day, can make the football beat writer for the Globe, the once proud and powerful Boston Globe, change his tune. Imagine Will McDonough doing that. Will McDonough, who once punched out Ray Claiborne in the locker room because Ray Claiborne started a fight with him and decked him. He would tell me to, you know, to slam parts of my manhood into my laptop, and then we'd probably go have a pint at, like, you know, the airy pub over it and laugh about it. But Ben Volen, who I actually don't have a personal problem with, I see him, I talk friendly to him, but I heard from a couple of different sports writers saying, go at him. Go at him. Let him have it. He's a fraud.
Well, probably even a new individual who's been added to the team probably might have gave you that same advice as well.
No. I don't know if he was paying attention, but I'm sure a guy who works at Arsenal now that has a grudge or two against the Boston Globe, probably. But just doing my thing, man. Just trying to defend the wall.
Good old
defend
Kirk.
Defend the wall.
Looking forward to hearing Kirk. All right, so we're going to go around the room. Just got a couple of moments left. And we may revisit this, but who will be the next Boston area team to win a title and give us a duck boat parade? Maddie?
I'm going to go first, of course. I'll take the Patriots.
Really?
That's the safe choice, I guess, out of the four. The Patriots, just because this might be Brady's last run or whatever.
Okay. Brendan?
Am I just copping out here, just saying the Patriots? I think that until Tom Brady retires, and whether he does in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, they all will always have a chance. I still don't know where the Bruins are going
to
be.
Funko Pop Tom. Go ahead, talk to him.
Hi, Tom. How's it going? I think you still have a great chance to win a Super Bowl this year. And I just think the Bruins are getting too old. I think the Celtics have 2 or 3 years of development to go, and the Red Sox are in a funk right now. We'll see how they go if they recover. But I think the Patriots have the best chance until Tom Brady's gone.
Okay. Sure.
I think the Patriots have the best chance of winning the next three, giving us the next three duck boats. And that's not totally disparaging the other teams. Clearly, the Celtics, there's one way to win an NBA title, and it's to have a top 10 player in a supporting cast. They don't. So, you can't do it with coaching or defense or team spirit or any of that other stuff. The Patriots... they've been to three straight Super Bowls. They're one missed field goal, extra point away from being to the last five Super Bowls. Their defense will be improved over the one that held the 11th highest scoring offense in NFL history to 3 points and 5 3 and outs in 12 possessions. I'm fascinated to see not only this draft class, but last year's that we forget, with the exception of Sony Michel, nobody was ever saw the field because of injuries. So you're going to get this influx of young talent combined with what is already a solid enough core to have won you a Super Bowl. And you've lost Gronk. And that's a big loss. You've lost Trey Flowers. That's a big loss. Beyond that, they're going to be improved across the board. So give me the Patriots for the next three rings, next three duck boat parades in this town. What about you, KT?
I'm going to say the Patriots as well. I think you basically hit the nail on the head, having Bill being your defensive coordinator and having, I think you get a good defense, especially you got a great secondary. You've got a couple. You've got some new blood. I think you got.
If Demaryius Thomas comes back healthy, I think he could have a big impact here.
And Josh Gordon,
that's a big key as well.
No one knows his status, and don't sleep on this kid, N'Keal Harry. He seems to have.
Yeah, he seems like, and he's already TB12ing it. So he's good to go. Jerry, Brendan, Matt, great segment. That's all the time that we have here. Until next time, we can reunite these Musketeers. We're going to call it a night. Talk to you next week at 6:15 p.m. coming to you from Campanelli Stadium in Brockton. Have a good night.